Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 77.
Simdy sit sims. That's Russian.
Happy holidays.
Oh, that was a fun intro.
This is Santa coming to you. Just kidding, it's Josh.
Well, you really fooled people, I think.
I think so. Hope everybody's having a lovely winter time, at least here in New York City. It is freezing cold.
It is so cold that our heat stopped working.
It did. I think I figured it out.
Yeah.
We have one of those fancy like Nest thermostats that...
I thought it was a good idea.
Is actually quite hard to program.
Yes.
It's too fancy for its own good.
Yes. And I'm also currently trying out a Christmas gift that I bought myself from Anthropology.
You can't see it, but Lindsay's wearing a mask that looks like she could be part of the cast of Watchmen on HBO.
But it's glitter stars. It's like one of those ones that you put in a freezer and then you put it on your face to depuff your eyes. And, you know, I don't know if it's working, but it definitely makes me look very cool.
Cool is certainly a word for it. Speaking of cool things, we saw a new Cirque du Soleil show last night called "Twas the Night Before," which is Cirque du Soleil's first officially Christmas-themed show. They'd done a winter-themed show called Wintuck in the past. This was actually the same theater, the Madison Square Garden Hulu Theater, which seats, I want to say, like 5,000 people.
Is it that much?
It's thousands if it's not 5,000.
It's a lot of people.
What'd you think, Linz?
I liked it a lot because it was so different from the normal Cirque show. I mean, it's still Cirque, but it's so different from the Cirque show. There's like no animation. There is no tech. It's very low tech. Is there any tech actually? There's maybe one moment with like a wind blower and confetti.
No, but it's definitely all very low tech for Cirque du Soleil.
Which I so appreciated. And, you know, there was one rigging point. It felt very...
Sparse,
which I think for some people who are expecting a Cirque show didn't like it. Like the people we were with didn't enjoy it as much because they're like, what? This is not really a Cirque show. Whereas I appreciated it so much.
Well, there were some really great acts. There was a really fantastic Diablo act, amazing duo Straps act. And of course, Cirque du Soleil is known for their Straps acts. And this one does not fail. There are some tricks I've never seen before in it, which is always saying something when you go and see a traditional discipline and they continue to find new things to do on it. The clown act was kind of strange. The clown act was pulled directly out of Curious. So, you know, usually Cirque du Soleil invents new clowns or new clown bits for each show. In this case, this was kind of recycled, which felt a little bit out of place.
It felt very out of place because it also, if you've seen Curious, it's a pretty long clown act. Like they have a sound effects portion and then they have a thing where he's like a cat and the audience pole is over his house while he's like being a cat.
It's very strange.
It's strange, and it was strange and curious, and it was really weird in "Twas the Night Before," and they cut it to like 20 seconds of the sound effects and then a minute of the cat, and I don't think the audience totally got what was going on.
I certainly didn't get what was going on. There was another rollerblading act, which was, I think it was actually professional ice skaters, probably people they've cast from their other shows they have going on, but doing an act on rollerblades, which was super cool because I'm pretty used to seeing the traditional roller skating circus acts where they're using roller skates as opposed to roller blades. And they had some cool technique and cool moves and tricks I'd never seen before, at least not on a stage. Probably seen them in, you know, Winter Olympic coverage. But that was pretty neat.
There was some drama.
Oh, yeah.
In the audience. It was a really weird. You know, again, it's a massive space. But behind us, not so close to us, but sort of closer to us, the guy who plays like the dad in the show, he does this rope act with a light on the end.
It was in the Paris Festival 2 years ago, if anybody watched that.
And it starts and it's beautiful. And then all of a sudden, in the back, there's like audiences screaming at each other, like, stop fighting. Like, are you really seriously picking a fight right now? And then the ushers are over, like, get out of here, get out of here. And like, they all have their flashlights on and it's so much commotion. And then they're like, stop fighting, stop fighting. And then all of a sudden, one usher is like, we need a paramedic. We need a medic. And the poor guy on stage is still just doing his act. And then the lights turn on because a girl got knocked out, apparently. Who knows? I mean, this is all hearsay because I was just listening to the people around me. But then it all happened. And then the lights turned back off and he kept going with his act. And, you know, a lot of people got up and left because I think they thought that something else was happening, like around that area. And we saw that performer afterwards, and I was like, I commend you on your commitment of just keeping the show going.
Yeah, it's just an attitude. If you're on stage and something's happened in the audience, till the stage manager tells you to stop, you just got to keep going.
But, I mean, it was not just like a little like boop, boop, boop. It was like a lot, and the house lights turned on, and he's doing this beautiful act. But then when the lights turned off, the audience was all with him. You know, they like gave him a huge round of applause.
Some people felt bad for him.
Of course, I mean, I felt bad for him. But, you know, I really liked it. And there was a lot of choreo.
By Vin Wing, who is, I hope I'm saying his last name right. It's a Filipino last name, so they're always pronounced kind of unusually. But he's actually very close friends with Keone Madrid, who's the choreographer, one of the choreographers for Beyond Babel, our show. And he's one of the founders of this dance troupe, Kinjas. And I just thought it was great seeing, you know, this urban dance style done in a Cirque du Soleil-y way. Definitely some of my favorite choreography in a Cirque show. One of our Beyond Babel dancers, Sam Moore, was in their five-person mm-hmm. dance troupe. Mm-hmm. Awesome seeing him on stage.
Yeah.
You know, he's such a talent. Can't wait to have him back in our show starting in January.
Yep, and there was a fun hoop diving act where they were all reindeer, except there was no Rudolph. There was Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen. And then there was never a Rudolph. And I was thinking it. And then the little kid behind me goes, but Dad, where is Rudolph? And I was like, why didn't they just put Rudolph in there? But it was a really good hoop diving act.
So I'd say overall to recommend.
Yeah.
I'd give it at least one thumb up. If not one thumb and a bit of a thumb.
Out of two thumbs up?
Out of two thumbs, yes.
I would say one and a half. It's a fun Christmas show. Like, I mean, it's not a typical Cirque show, which I appreciate it again. But, I mean, it's fun. If you like Christmas stuff and Christmas music, you know, go see the show.
Now, Lindsay and I aren't really able to take much of a holiday break this year. We're taking probably a day off around Christmas and Christmas Eve. But we are working 6-7 days a week from dawn till dusk. We're getting ready to open Beyond Babel off-Broadway. This is the show we've been talking about for 2 years. We opened it in San Diego in 2018. It ran in San Diego for 6 months. We had a little bit of a hiatus over the summer and fall, and it's opening at the Gym at Judson, which is a 150-seat theater off of Washington Square Park. And man, are we in the thick of it right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, transferring a show that you've done for a year in a found space to a more traditional theater in New York off Broadway, there is a lot of pressure to have it live up to what it accomplished in San Diego, but then also raise the bar because you're going to New York. Like, to me, New York is where you really can live or not die, but definitely where you can live to further heights.
If you can, as somebody said to me yesterday, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
Yes.
Which I think is only sort of true, but at least in show business, it's true.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, a lot of entertainment for theater look to New York about what's being done in New York, and that's what they program. So I think it's a big opportunity, and I hope it goes well. And with that, we've really tried to make it more professional. You know, Josh and I did a lot of stuff in San Diego that typically producers, creators in our role would not do. And, you know, we had people working on it who weren't also really familiar with theater. And that was great for out there. But when you go to New York, it's like, you know, people know what should be done. So we hired a production manager who's, you know, way too qualified, but just wanted to work on the show because she's amazing. She was just like, I like the show. And, you know, her big thing is Jersey Boys. So she really knows what she's doing. And it's so nice because we have drawings of the space and seat risers and heights and where everything's being hung and a lighting grid and where we're hanging curtains. And, you know, in San Diego, Josh and I were just kind of like, there's a pole right here. Let's hang the curtain there. That
seems easy.
Like it will work. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we said no support. I mean, we had a little bit of support, but not really support in San Diego because it's not really where we live. And among the things, we're sort of thinking about Beyond Babel New York as the enhanced version. So everything that was great, we're bringing with us, and everything that was so-so or we wanted to improve is being enhanced. Included in that is the lights. You know, lighting and dance and circus is such a key thing. And we've brought on Jeff Kreuter, who's a Tony Award-winning lighting designer, who Lindsay and I have known for a couple of years now, to do the lighting. We're already talking about doing some pretty crazy things. London, our crochet designer, who previously crocheted the fence set pieces, is now doing a massive, what is it, 15 feet by 30 feet?
30 feet wide by 15 feet high.
Massive backdrop, as well as a front portal. Front portal is the term for sort of the proscenium, but the proscenium just means that the arch, the portal is the actual curtain part of that. So rather than having a traditional curtain, we're doing a crocheted curtain.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about taking what worked and then changing what didn't. And, you know, that's what is so traditionally done with out-of-town tryouts with shows that then come to Broadway. It's like you really got to listen to the audience and really be realistic about what needs to improve. And the crochet was so impactful. Well received and impactful that it was like, of course you add more crochet. Like, of course we have to. And it was always the dream anyway, but you know, we ran out of time.
And money.
And money. And it was like, let's do this. And London is such an incredible artist. If you don't follow her on Instagram, you should. It's Made by London. And I've actually known her because we have a mutual best friend, and she would be crocheting in my apartment all the time. And I was like, oh, this is so annoying. Like, stop getting yarn everywhere. And now she's like, you know, this artist and doing this show with us. So it's so funny.
We're also bringing on a new costume designer who comes from the world of high fashion and concerts, just coming off of doing American Utopia on Broadway. And I think you too on concert. Yeah. But we're really going for that sort of Kanye West Yeezy look. Previously, we'd just been trying to work with the tiny little budget we had. And thankfully, because the show was so well received in San Diego, we have a little bit more padding to make custom costumes and make things that really pop. So for those of you who saw it in San Diego or came to the one day only New York presentation, please come back. I think you guys are going to be really impressed and surprised by the way we've enhanced it. There's two new songs and pieces of choreography in the show that weren't there before. So there's definitely something new for fans who've seen it. And I think for those who haven't, you're really going to be blown away.
Yeah, I think the trick is to keep the integrity of why it worked and then enhance everything else. And the costumes I am very excited about. I think the idea is like streetwear times high fashion times urban dance. And I hope we achieve that. I think we're going to achieve that. But, you know, it's very stressful, especially being a producer. You know, we talk later in our interview about kind of being the like head of the ship and having to make like the right calls. And sometimes you don't make the right calls. Josh and I get stuff wrong a lot of the time, but we get a lot of it right. And, you know, just not letting it get too overwhelming and know that it also is just a show. And I hope it's the best it can be.
It is. And I don't remember which person I was watching, but it was about somebody making a Disney movie recently, or maybe it was the Imagineering documentary on Disney Plus, saying that at some point you just need to trust your collaborators and trust the process. And we are in that point right now. So,
oh, it was Kristen Lopez.
Kristen Lopez, right, from Frozen.
Yes.
Also, I don't know if we talked about that on the podcast, but if you haven't seen Frozen 2, just as good as Frozen 1.
Not as good as Frozen 1.
The song Into the Unknown is awesome, just like Let It Go. Totally unrelated, but Kristen Lopez gave me that little gem of wisdom. And I think it's very true for us that, you know, we've put all of our plans in place and now it's about executing it. And about a month from now, the show will be open and audiences will be in there.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, we do actually know that a couple big publications are going to be writing about the show early on. And I assume once those drops, getting tickets is going to be increasingly more difficult as already the first couple of weeks are getting close to fully sold. So if you want to see the show, particularly in January, February, we're playing the whole spring. But if you want to see it early on, get your tickets now. Visit beyondbabelshow.com or hideawaycircus.com. The link's up there too. And if you use the code podcast at checkout, you'll get 15% off your total order because we love our podcast fans.
Yeah, we do.
Before we jump into today's episode with Bruno Gagnon from Flip Fabric, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, Circus Talk, the online circus community's number one place for jobs, news, and event information. I'm going to point out a few things I saw on the website this morning. Under the job section, there's a UK-based hip-hop dance show on a major streaming platform. I'm assuming that's ITV or the BBC, looking for hip-hop dancers with acrobatic skills. Kind of like our cast, but if that sounds like something that fits you, go on their website, learn more about it. They're also an invitation from the Dynamo Workspace, which I understand is in Denmark. They've just opened their artist and residency applications that will run through April, but they're looking for circus artists who are in their career and in, quote, constant flow, whatever that means. But fine, I don't know what constant flow is, but I guess that's the theme. That's all under the job section. Under the events section, the Budapest Circus Festival is happening January 8th, and the International Circus Festival Gold Elephant, which I believe is happening in Spain, is happening February 13th. Their event section is a great place to find out where to see circus, what circus shows are going on, where, and when. I definitely want to check out the Budapest Circus Festival. Unfortunately, that's my birthday, and we'll be in tech, so we can't make it to Budapest, but...
You have to say Budapest.
Excuse me, Budapest. And finally, under the news section, they have a good article called Six Tips for Applying to Circus Schools, which is a nice little summation of various pieces of wisdom for those of you who are young and trying to figure out where to go to pursue circus professionally.
What's one of the six tips?
You gotta go online and find out. Can't give those away. Those are for people who go on Circus Talk. Make an account, go read the article. So on today's episode, we have Bruno Gagnon. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right, Bruno. He's from Flip Fabric. He's founded the company along with a few other artists, all based out of the Quebec Circus School. Flip Fabric is a contemporary circus company that's been touring all over Europe, North America, and Canada the last couple of years. They're super cool. I first saw their show, Attrapez-moi, which I think means catch me or catch me in
really?
French.
We're both so good.
Anybody
at
who listens to this podcast knows I don't speak French. But I had a great time at the show. I've seen many of these artists and also other companies. But it's a really interesting interview about starting a circus collective, particularly from somebody who's, you know, on the younger side of it, what it's like to tour it, what it takes to put on these big shows. They both do big shows and little shows, so they sort of run the gamut of having a lot of money and also doing things on a budget. I really enjoyed talking to Bruno. They have a show coming to Lake Placid, New York, which I think is the closest they come to New York City. But definitely, if you're a young circus artist trying to figure out how do I make a company and what's going on in the scene today, this is a great episode.
But if you like our podcast, please, please, please make sure to subscribe on iTunes and rate us on iTunes. That's very helpful. And follow us on Instagram. I'm going to get better at posting more. And if you want to chat with us, email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. And of course, you can always Twitter tweet us, even though I don't like Twitter.
I'm on Twitter all the time.
Josh is on Twitter all the time.
And don't forget to get tickets to our new show off-Broadway, Beyond Babel. If you like acrobatics, if you like dance, this show's for you. Use code podcast at checkout for 15% off.
We'll be there like every night, so come say hello.
Here's our interview with Bruno. Bruno, thank you for chatting with us. We like to start every episode off by asking our guests where they're from originally.
I'm from Quebec City, Canada. Quebec, the province, and Quebec City, the city. So Quebec.
Did you see a lot of circus growing up in Quebec?
I saw, you know, parades during the winter. I did see a couple circus when I was young, but not a lot. But starting age 11, when I started to do circus, I saw circus like all the time. I was always in circus schools, and it was my life starting at 11, 12.
How did you discover it at 11 or 12?
Like I said, I saw a parade, La Parade du Carnaval, and I saw a guy with his all his winter gear and his big boots and everything. And I saw him doing a standing back duck on the concrete while it was like minus 30 outside. And it really, really impressed me to see like, oh my God, it is possible to do a flip out of nowhere. And it really impressed me a lot. And so I really have this clear image, and I was really, really young. And then, after that, I climbed fences and, you know, I jump off the roof into the snow, and then my mom got scared, so she threw me in a circus school, and I stayed there forever.
So, what did you study at circus school?
So basically, I back then Quebec Circus School did not have like this program that is a professional program. It was more like, okay, what do you want to do today? Oh, a trampoline. Yes. So I did a lot of trampoline. And so what did we learn? I learned everything basically from Russian bar, trampoline, tito board, juggling, club juggling, ring juggling. Floor acrobatic, flying trapeze, everything. It's a circus school. But then you get hooked on different apparatus and different skills that you like best. And me was really juggling and trampoline was my both passions.
Was there a point in high school or when you were studying professionally at the Quebec Circus School where you were like, oh, wow, this really can and should be my career?
I never had this thought because it's like I said, the only thing I've ever done. So it just came to me like, that's what I do. So, and at some point, oh, I'll do a parade. Hey, I did get money for that parade. Cool. And then, oh, a kids party. Oh, okay, cool. And then street performance when I was like 13. And then it just became my job. Yeah. So it was never really a question, because I started really early to actually earn a living with performing. So,
Just a very natural transition. And when you were at Quebec, were they pushing you to be a generalist, or were they trying to have you specialize in juggling or trampoline, or how does that sort of program professionally work?
this is an amazing, tricky question. And yes, I'll have to say, and especially in my time when I was there, which is what, 15, 16 years ago. Like I said, it's more of like, what do you want to do today? And then, okay, that's what we're going to do. So basically anything that we felt like that, you know, that was not so programmed and la la la. So yes, we did touch everything. And you end up without, I didn't end up with like a diploma or anything. So it's not like, oh, you need to do this, to do this, to go through that. It was pretty open. So yes, everyone was pushed to do everything. And it's basically what we do in Flip Fabric. All the artist does everything. So it kind of makes sense that most of our acrobats are from that circus school. And yeah, there's a difference. And I can tell it's we're more generalist than specialist in one particular act.
But that seems so much, I guess, not better, but more interesting when you're devising a show because then you have so much to work with rather than one person can only do this acrobatic skill and this person can only juggle. Like it seems like so much more fun to create a show with people who have tons of skills.
The productions we do in Quebec City during the summer, we do have those specialists because there is a difference when you do only one act. This act really rocks. I mean,
Yeah, you're really good at
rock.
it.
And you need some of those to balance a show, especially when it's big productions. But it's in production that are, I would say, a bit smaller, that are tourable, and it's the one that we actually do also with Flip. We usually go with, you know, people that does many things, and yes, indeed, it becomes, you know, always a group thing, and everyone's doing everything all the time. And yes, it's not like you do an act, then you're, and then the other one does an act, and then so it's more of a group thing. And yes, indeed, there's more fun.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to start the company and the first show you guys made and how that all went down?
So basically, I was with Cirque du Soleil for 5 years. I performed around 1,600 shows with them, and then I got tired. So, and I missed my home, and I missed my friend. And then I called everyone. They were all working with, you know, Eloise and cabarets, and they all had, you know, separate jobs individually. And then I all called them, and I said, "Okay, I'm leaving Cirque du Soleil. Let's do a show all together." They went, "Okay," and so it happened, and then the show was created, and then the company, and then 8 years later, we have like 70 employees. So it's really cool.
What is the creation process like? Do you have one person who devises it? Is it a group? Can you talk a little bit about that?
So the way we work, I am not a metteur en scène. I'm not a stage director. I am an artistic director. So I don't have this I'm not a stage director. So what happened is we gather as a group, mostly all the founding members, we all gather and we talk about what would be the next show, what would be nice, what would work, what we didn't do yet, what is the you know, what the theme of the show. And then after that, it goes to concepteur, all the concepteur, conceptors, scenography, light, music, costumes, and then a metteur en scène, a stage director, and we all build a team, telling this team what is the theme of the show, and then it goes. It takes from, you know, 4 weeks to a year and a half to set a show and have it ready to roll. Yeah.
What Cirque show were you in?
I did the Cirque show, and after that, I did about 100 special events with them afterwards when I left from being a full-time employee with them. The transition in between, you know, having a real job with Flip Fabric and, you know, leaving my steady job at Cirque Soleil, in between, I did some special events with them. I went to work with Seven Fingers, with the Pepsi as well for a little bit. But I was mostly on curtail for roughly 1,600 shows.
Curtail. Oh my God.
So, you know, when you left and started working on this first Flip Fabric show, was the hope that it would become this larger company with multiple productions and last many years? Or was it just like, let's just make this show and see what happens?
I would be lying if I had like, I had a business plan. But when I left Corteo, I wanted to do a show with my friends and come back home for a little while and feel home with my friends, although I'm on tour, and that's what we did. So that was goal number one when I left. But of course, after that, I got mentored, I got taught, and especially Cirque Soleil, they teach me so many things outside, you know, the production, how it works, and who, you know, departments and technical and all that, and touring and logistics and all that. So I learned a lot with them, so I can apply all those while now with the company we have now. But to answer the question clearly, I would have to say that I did not think about how big it would, you know, grow and get. But right now, we're on a wave. People really enjoy what we're doing. They get hooked on the project. Everyone dives in, you know, with full passion and heart. So it's cool. It's growing really well, and we're just surfing that wave, and it keeps on and on and on. It's really nice.
What was the first show you guys created?
It was Attrape-moi, Catch Me, which was basically a retrospective on our own story, because, you know, it's all my friends that we were in circus school together, and we all left to go work with big circuses and came back all together. So basically the show was, it's six friends that hasn't seen each other for 10 years, and then they gather at a cottage. I almost said cabbage, but they gather at the cottage. And then they spend a weekend there, and it's basically, you know, unfolding chairs and doing acrobatic in sleeping bags, throwing each other in the air, catching, laughing, eating a popsicle contest, the one that eats it the fastest, the more. So it was a really straightforward, very strong, energetic, acrobatically really high. And the trampo wall, we already had it. So it really pushed our brand out as a young, dynamic, energetic, skillful, company.
I think I saw that. That was like, I got into circus later in life through Josh, I think maybe about 6 years ago. And he took me to every show in New York that came through. And, I think that's the one I saw at New Vic.
Absolutely.
So, and I loved it.
Yay! That was us. So, we saw each other then. Well, you saw me on stage and I saw you in the audience.
Exactly. With a million kids.
And you just said you're currently on your show Blizzard. Is that the latest one?
So, yeah. Blizzard is our newborn baby. Came out in July. We've been thinking about it roughly like a year before it started the creation. And so, it's brand new. We premiered it, world premiere in Amsterdam in July. Then we went to another city in Europe. Then we went to Edinburgh for the fourth year in a row. And now with Blizzard this summer. And then now we have an amazing, cool tour in the province of Quebec. And we did our first USA gig, well, not gig, but city, in Hanover. That was last weekend, actually, like 2 days ago.
New Hampshire.
In Hanover, New Hampshire?
New Hampshire, I think so. NH, yeah. Well, 4 hours
yeah.
away from where I live.
Nice. New Hampshire has a weird, actually not bad circus culture. There's a couple of old circus people who live up there and teach. But you mentioned Edinburgh yeah. for a moment and having done it 4 years yeah. in a row. I'm wondering yeah. if you can also sort of talk about that experience and what you feel like, you know, you learned over 4 years, because Edinburgh is quite a challenge when you have thousands and thousands of shows.
Edinburgh is pure madness. There's no other way to say it. It is insanely crazy, the amount of activities, the amount of shows that is going on. I always say this, that we're always at the same venue. And so year one and two, we were in that venue. And so, okay, I do my preset and I go to the bathroom. I wash my hand before the show. And the third year, I go there. I was like, oh, the bathroom door is locked. What's going on? It was a venue now. So put venues everywhere, anywhere that there's a seat. And even if it's a 20-seater, it's going to be a venue. There's going to be a show and all that. It's really cool for the brand Flip Fabric to say like, hey, we're doing Edinburgh. So people are waiting to see like, okay, what will Flip Fabric bring to the table this year at Edinburgh? And so that this is really nice. So we do have a good amount of people that knows us over there and they come year after year. And when they see our show, they go, oh, yes, I saw this show. It's the third show I come and see. And it's really, really cool. But it is really difficult, of course, marketing, budget, ticket sales, and then to get the attraction from the news and the media so that they talk about the show and the flyering and this whole crazy madness of this month. And you play with there's so many circus shows now, more than ever. Every year there's more and more and more circus shows. And yeah,
And do you feel like Edinburgh, like through all the madness, did help you guys, you know, book a European tour? Was it worth it, or is it just like a fun experience?
A bit of both, depend on each year. Like the third year, we went back with Attrape-moi, and it was not to book the show more because it was already fully booked. Although now, yeah, it has it sleeps for no, it sleeps for now. Attrape-moi sleeps for now. Because I don't want to say a show dies. It's too sad. So I say it sleeps for now.
Oh, for sure. It's like Alegria. It will come back in, you know, 20 years.
Exactly. So let's do it 10 years after. Let's do it in 10 years. But
yeah, perfect.
I got lost in the question you just asked me.
No, basically, you know, people, our friends who've done Edinburgh, we did the Adelaide Fringe Festival.
Yes, we did that too.
You know. Oh, okay, you did that one too. So, you know, for us, it was.
Wait, where were you guys at the Adelaide Festival?
Gluttony. We were.
Gluttony. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, it went okay, but it was not. Edinburgh was better too for us. Than Australia. But
yeah,
it was
Australia
cool.
is a very strange market there, and their like aesthetic for circus is quite different from
Indeed.
You know, Canada and the U.S.
Indeed, yes. It is different. They're really good. They are a good exporter of circus. I think I would have to say that the first ones are, you know, Canadian Quebecers. There's so many circuses and so many shows. I'd have to say that worldwide, the second would be Australians.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy the style that they bring. And with those, you know, the bigger company, the Circa and Gravity and Other Myth, which right now are, I would have to say, the biggest. There's Circus Oz as well. But the biggest, you know, production that comes out, it's really, really good shows as well. But yeah, Australians, they do have a different market. And so at Adelaide, it was cool though. In January for a Quebecer to be next to the beach, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, that was, I agree. The weather was one of the best parts about that festival.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Yes.
But basically what I was curious about is like, would you recommend it essentially, you know, the next circus troupe coming out of one of the circus schools, you say like, yeah, do Edinburgh. It was worth it. We had a good time, or no, it was too stressful.
It depends on so many levels. I'd have to talk to these people individually and figure it out afterwards. Who pays for it? Who directs it? How many people you are? You have an agent? What's your goal with this? Do you want to promote yourself or not? And it's all those questions. And if someone is like, no, we don't want to take risks. We don't have money. We have no agents and we just never want to tour the show. Yeah, you might not want to go to Edinburgh, you know, but if it's like, yeah, we're pretty solid. We know the show will rock and we know we have a good marketing package and promotional packs and promo everything. And we are intending to, you know, tour the show for the next 4 years and then, yeah, it becomes something more interesting. But so to answer the question, it really depends on what these people are looking for and who they are and, yeah, what they want.
You know, one of the things I think is so special about Flip Fabrique and that very few other companies, you know, of your generation have been able to crack is touring in North America. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that, what it's like to take your show all over Canada and the U.S. And, you know, unlike Europe, the U.S. and Canada are huge countries where you're touring, you know, quite long distances.
It's indeed. We are doing our fourth right now. There's the show Transit that is touring like tonight. Netherlands. So,
oh sure.
And the Netherlands are literally as big as the distance between Montreal and Quebec, which is 3 hours away. And we did more shows in the Netherlands with both our shows, Acamo and Transit, than we did in the whole Canada. So it's indeed something special. And to answer the question, I have to say that the shows that we do produce are family oriented. It's not a niche. And so everyone will enjoy it. Everyone will find a way to get attached to our shows, to grasp a piece of emotion or something that they get or they will remember or think differently the day afterwards. People get hooked on our shows. So this helps. And the promoter, the diffuser, the producers, they see it, they smell it. And so this helped, of course. But after that, it's a whole team of agents and people that are passionate about their job, and it's to represent us. And in our case, we have the chance to have Cami Music to represent us in English Canadian and the USA. And they're really amazing people, and they help us so much and all. And they are, you know, they know how to, you know, sell the shows we're doing, and they came and see the show, and so they know how to talk about it, and then the show we produce, we always, you know, put maximum emphasis on every aspect of it, and to make sure it's really cool, it means something, it's cool looking, and it's acrobatically really like on top, and all those things that makes, you know, something livable, tourable.
So I know you said that when you start thinking about a show, you are in a room and you talk about what you haven't done, what you want to do, the themes. But so like for Blizzard, let's say, so you pick the theme, or how did that start? Did you pick the theme or did you start talking about snow? Like how did that kind of come to fruition?
We had, actually, it's our agent, Teresa. She actually said, do a show with the fourth season. So we do four shows. We can book four, you know. So I was like, wait a minute. And then I got that in my head. And I was like, do a show with four seasons. I was thinking about the scenography and, you know, how the emotions you get when the snow arrives and when it melts and then when the spring comes and all that and the colors of the leaves when they fall. And I was like, that's something really nice to do. And then I start talking with a producer in France. And I spoke to her about this idea, and she came to me and she said, well, it's exactly what Cirque Plume will do next year. And so, oh no. So we ended up going, you know, we're Quebecers. How about we focus on blizzard, on snow, on whiteout, on, you know, just the winter. And so I spoke to the director, Olivier Normand, which he directed Attrape-moi and Blizzard. And he was like, yeah. And he got also, he got, you know, how do you say, got juice from it. He got inspiration from it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it started from there. And seriously, there's so many things to do. And we're all from here. And there's always like 1 to 10 feet of snow everywhere, all the, and 10 feet, I mean more than that. So, and we all played and we all know the emotions that you have when you go out, and it makes, you know, vapor or smoke when you breathe, and then, you know, when your hands get so cold, it becomes hot. Yeah, and to stick your tongue on a piece of metal, when the school closes because there's a snowstorm, when you fight in the snow with your friends to push them, you know, down the mountain. Oh, and again, like I said, I started in the snow. I started doing backflip, climbing up the fence and throwing backflips and landing in the snow and all that. So it all made so much sense and it became natural to go in that direction.
So when you have all these ideas, how do you then structure it into a show?
Stage director, Olivier Normand.
So he kind of just takes it and...
Yeah, we propose, we give good things, bad things, really bad things, and some very good things. And so he comes out, he has an external eye, he thinks about it, thinks about the music also, he guides this. And in creation process, I will direct it when I need to, when I see like, oh no, this is really not going a good direction. But precisely, I am not doing it. It is the stage director that has to come up with, you know, the transitions and everything, basically. Big pictures, I'm there. Otherwise, it's clearly the stage director that has to build the show.
One of the things I saw just on the Flip Fabric Instagram is the set for Blizzard, which is pretty big, it looks like.
It's simple, but so complex. It's not a big set. It's a cube. It's a prism. It's a prism.
Prism.
And it's literally a 17 foot by 8 by 8 prism. And that's it. And there's the piano. So the set is, compared to Transit, the set is really, really small in Blizzard. But it is so complex. And the piano has a keyboard, and then it has a loop station. It has a console over there. It has and there's a smoke machine in it. And then there's LED, and there's the monitors. And then there's two little speakers. And then, oh, there's a thumb box here. And all the pedals are there. Oh, and it's on wheel. Oh, and there's a, oh my God, it's so complicated. But it looks really cool. And it looks like a normal piano, and it looks like a really normal prism. But no, it's complex.
So where do you see like the company going in the next 5 to 10 years? Like, what would you guys love to do? What kind of, you know, ambitions are you putting on the table?
We love touring shows, and the satisfaction you have when you discover a city or a theater, but also when you go back with another show later and you see, you know, the presenter that is so happy to see you and to see that people come, and it's because it's Flip Fabric, they come and see another show because it's us. This warms our hearts so much. It's people that trust, believe, and push in the same direction as we do. So this really, really is something we want to have, the recognition that Flip is great shows. And so, oh, it's Flip. My God, I will talk about it. I enjoy so much. And this really is something that we're hoping to accomplish, and it will never end. You know, it's like, it's never ending. But, and despite that, we do have big productions here in Quebec, with the city. We gathered, you know, how many hundreds of thousands of people in the past 5 years. It's a free show that Quebec City gives and that we produce every summer. And we rocked. This summer was an amazing. It was 42 shows. Of course, when it was not raining, we had like over 5,000 people per day. It was amazing. It was intense. So the basically to go play with those humongous productions and to go also and tour different shows that are more intimate, that are more, I'd have to say poetic and precise and less of a big production, you know? And to go play in those two things and to maybe have another city that we can do those big productions and, you know, have another, we'll have another creation coming out next year. So that will make 3 shows on the road. So just keep riding the wave is for now what needs to happen. And without growing it too fast, without going too fast, just you know, going with the energy and where things brings us, and, you know, trusting all the instinct and all the opportunity that we have, and grasp everything we can and do the best. That's basically what we're going to do.
I guess I should have asked this question earlier, but where did the name Flip Fabrique come from?
So that was difficult. It's always every time either it's the name of a show, the name of a company, a brand, a new car, anything that has a name. It's always difficult. And at some point you just need to make a decision. I really enjoy the fact that there's Flip because we do flips. That's what we do. And Flip Fabrique, Fabrique means factory. So Flip Factory-ish, that would be the translation, fits really well with what we do. And it sounds good. And there's the Q-U-E at the end of that, Flip Fabrique, which is Quebec. And then, yeah, Flip. Flip was something that we grasped. And basically, that's it.
Nice. And, you know, you just mentioned that you can have a third show on the road next year. We have a lot of circus artists who listen to the podcast. How do they work for Flip, or what do you guys look for in circus artists?
Like we discussed, of course, someone that is high acrobatic, that does like 30 acts, not 30 acts, no. The porter that will juggle. And at the end of the show, guess what? He does trample well. Oh my God. This is the kind of stuff that is completely essential when you work, you know, full time on the road with Flip. Otherwise, it's really, really, sorry, of a kick-ass act that we take and we with the big shows. People that are strong, like we had Irina Numenko. I'm sure I say this name, and like half the people that will listen know her. She's like one of the best in the world. And these are the people that we go and get to go do the big productions in the summer. And otherwise, just keep training, and write to us. And we have this on our website if you want to apply for a job and all that. It's all the links are there. And we do have a database, and we listen and read everything that has been sent to us. And yeah, it's
Nice. Well, everybody go submit now if you have a killer act or 30 killer acts.
Yes, exactly.
So we typically wrap up our podcast by asking our guests the same three questions. So the first question is, has there been a piece of advice, really good or really bad, that somebody has given you and has stuck with you?
Oh, I remember my artistic director when I was in Cirque du Soleil. He told me that he just believed in me, and he knew I didn't fit 100% at the job I had. And he basically said like that I did not have a 100% evaluation at that year when I was in Cincinnati. But he knew, and he told me like, but you'll go far. He just told me that it's not because you don't fit 100% in Cincinnati that means you're a bad person or you're not going to go anywhere. On the other side, he said to me like, you'll go far. And that really, it really shook me. And I really enjoy that. Otherwise, someone that told me something bad that really changed something. If it was bad, then I don't listen.
otherwise, that's the right attitude.
Work hard. It's just so much hard work. And when you think if you want to do too fast, too big, too quick, you're going to get burned and tired. But work hard, that's for sure.
When you said that you got like evaluated for Cirque du Soleil and then you didn't fit totally, what did they say to you? That must have been like such a hard thing to hear as a performer.
But I was 18 years old.
So even harder.
No, but it's just I was, you know, I have to say I was a bit cocky and whoops, a little attitude over there. And then I fight with the technician there. But then, you know, you get mature, and I was not mature enough to have a full-time job on the road alone in a hotel room. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
When you're 18, you know, 6 months ago, you live at your parents, and now you have a full-time job on tour with strangers and all that. So, of course, it hits you kind of, whoa. But mature, and then you know how to, you know, how to be, how to act in a group, how to you know, put some water in your wine to be just like, okay, maybe we don't get along and it's okay, just let it go and all that. So yeah, it's maturity. It becomes to be on tour You need a maturity, that's for sure. Resilience, maturity, and be ready to work hard.
That's actually a good segue to the next question, which is, for somebody who's a student and learning circus right now, is there a show or a book or a movie that you would recommend they check out that you think is just a great artistic reference?
All our shows? No kidding. No, I'd have to say the way it is filmed, and I'd have to say mostly all Cirque du Soleil DVDs. I know it's a cliche, and I know they are there for 10, 12, 20 years now, but when you watch La Nuba in DVD, it's really nice. And, you know, the way the Pierrot goes and pull over in the window and how he just let his hand there. And it's so nice. And so, yeah, all those DVDs. But despite that, I would have to say that all the smaller companies that comes out with shows that tours, either Alphonse or, like we said, Gravity Another Myth, or even, of course, the Seven Fingers. All these things are pioneers in a new circus genre. And I think to know what's going on, what they do, and it's not to copy. It's to know what they do and do something your way, but that is inspired by that. I think it's where we should go, yeah.
Great answer.
So the last question is, who do you think we should have on our podcast?
Yeah, I heard you had Shay Nakaro.
Yes. We had her after we saw their newest show. What's it called?
The
Passengers.
Passengers.
But I really enjoy Cirque Alphonse. They are another Quebecer circus company.
Yeah.
Antoine from Cirque Alphonse could be really funny to talk with for 40 minutes, for sure.
Great.
Yeah, we've seen their shows too. They're so fun. I do like, and you know, we know some people from Gravity and Other Myths, yeah. And it is great to see all of those different shows because they feel similar, but they're also different. So that was good advice for people to see, like, all of those smaller companies.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. It's similar. We still do circus companies, produce circus shows, but we all have our style, our ideas behind our heads, our yeah, we all have our style and something that we want to say that is different. So
yeah,
it's really interesting. I like it.
Yeah, it's fun. I hope we can see Blizzard. It sounds great.
Yeah, is it coming to New York anytime soon?
We have a humongous USA tour starting in January. And next year, actually next month. And so, yeah, please have a look at the dates. And I'm pretty sure we go by near where people live. We do like 56 shows and six. It's a humongous tour. So,
great.
Well, Bruno, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It was a pleasure talking to you. Best of luck with the new tour and the new creation.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And that was our interview with Bruno from Flip Fabric.
If you like our podcast, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, tweet us, or email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com.
And of course, we have our off-Broadway show premiering in New York City this January, titled Beyond Babel. It's an amazing dance show. Tickets are online. Use the code podcast at checkout for 15% off.
Have a good holiday break, everyone.
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa?
Is that a thing?
Yeah. Kwanzaa. Happy Christmas Kwanzaa. Our podcast is also available on Circus Talk, the international circus community's online resource and employment tool. If you are not a member yet, register and find your spotlight with Circus Talk today.